Mike, if I wasn't having so much fun on this ship, and I'm not talking about my romp with the sperm extrapolator, now that I know what she is, my sex life may be over. Anyway, so far most of my experiences on this ship have been mind-blowing fantastic, so it's difficult for me to be upset about anything at this time, including the fact that my body is being used without my knowledge or consent. Mike walked out of the room and into the hall and headed to the corridor with the portals. INT. Of corridor, continuous. He looks out the windows and notices that something is different. Earth is missing. He runs around the corridor looking to see if it's on the other side, and what he sees nearly knocks the wind out of him. Cut to, EXT. Outside of Graft, continuous, the ship is docked to a huge structure and there are hundreds if not thousands of similar ships docked to this superstructure. The structure is several thousand feet in each direction and Mike cannot see the edges from where he is. Milton Michael, the portholes are movable as you learned earlier. Just move one to a spot above you so that you don't strain your neck trying to see outside the ship. Mike, I can't reach the ceiling. How do I move the portal to a spot above me? Milton, you are in space where there is no gravity. Boost yourself with a little push. The gravity in the ship is equal on the ceiling and walls as it is on the floor. You can wall on the ceiling and walls if you wish. Mike jumps and floats to the ceiling and positions a portal directly above where he was standing. Then realizes the ceiling now feels like the floor, and the floor looks like the ceiling. Mike, now I'm totally confused. Where is up and where is down? Question mark. And where the hell are we? I don't see Earth anymore? Question mark. Just when I think I'm getting used to this crazy stuff and enjoying myself, all the rules change and my mind has to make another reality leap. Milton, in space there is no up, down, or sideways for that matter. And we took a little trip while you were watching the movie. We are now 10 million miles away from Earth, in the direction of the sun. This ship is parked on the dark side of the mother ship, or space station if you prefer that term. Cut to, EXT. Outside of ship, continuous, Mike looks down through the porthole and sees a gigantic large slab that radiates a yellow glow. The glow is a 700-foot thick film that projects from the dark object. The structure itself is pure black, the pixels that make up the glowing skin are balls about the size of a house, spaced equally apart. Mike can see the other ships as they reside in a gap between the structure and the glowing skin. The gap is about 1,000 feet wide and the ships look like seeds on a strawberry as they clasp to the face of the space object. Cut to, INT. Of corridor. Continuous, Mike jumps back to the floor and moves a porthole to the original floor and sees as far as the eye can see, the same thing, a huge structure speckled with ships. Mike, how big is this thing, and what is it? Milton, it's big enough, and as far as what it is you will find out as much as you need to know shortly. By the way Michael, the portholes move by telepathy, try it next time. Mike, I was afraid you would tell me something like that. I'm at the fine line between ecstasy and madness. Are you sure I can handle all this stuff? Milton, that's exactly what we are going to find out, Michael. But you must remember one thing, everything is simply information, there is no magic, only perception. For instance, there are people on Earth that have no clue about microwave ovens, to them microwaves are magic, to others that magic is a simple device used to cook food with. Now Michael, go back to that hallway with all the doors and look for the green door and enter it. Cut to, INT. Hallway, continuous, Mike walks past several doors, all white, and comes to the green one. He hesitates, knowing that it's probably another test, takes a deep breath, then walks through it. Cut to, INT. Mother ship, continuous, what he sees makes him cry and he nearly passes out from absolute delight. The sun takes up a large portion of the view of the glassed-in enclosure. Every detail of the sun is visible, yet there is no heat or blinding glare. The enclosure is several hundred stories tall and equally as wide and deep. It appears to be a perfect cube. Venus is also prominent in the view, but only the size of a pimple on the face of the sun. Mike, thank you Milton, I owe you big time for this one, but how can I possibly ever return the favor? Is this what heaven is like? Have I died and gone to heaven? Is it possible to top this one experience? I can hardly conceive of anything more beautiful. I am complete. Milton, this is nothing compared to the big picture of the things in this galaxy and the realities in it, let alone the universe as a whole. It's not even a fraction of a pixel concerning the big picture. Mike, why are humans kept in the dark ages? We believe ourselves to be on the cutting edge of space exploration with our probes to Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, yet from what you have shown me in the last few minutes, space has been explored and conquered, and humans for the most part remain ignorant of apparently everything. Milton, Earth is a playpen for some and a prison for others. There are millions of similar planets in this galaxy, and the majority of the people on them have blinders on, just like on Earth. Mike, what is this thing? What's the purpose for it? And who built it? Milton, it was built by machines many millions of Earth years ago, for only one purpose, entertainment. Mike, this is so insane. Millions of years ago by machines for entertainment. For who? Were the people on Earth that far back? Milton, for people like you, Michael. And yes, there were people on Earth millions of years ago. Mike, I feel so special. Sarcasm. That makes absolutely no sense. Why not let the rest of the world know about this? No answer. Mike is standing on a balcony that overlooks a large open space. The balcony is one of hundreds stacked on top of each other at 30-foot intervals. The material looks metallic and futuristic, and not something that is millions of years old. The glass facing the sun is one solid piece. Mike's balcony appears to be 100 stories up, and above him there are several hundreds of stories. There are large outcroppings, platforms with open markets and cafes. Exotic plants and spectacular varieties of colorful and fragrant flowers adorn the balconies and platforms. Sparkling waterfalls hanging in mid-air and dropping hundreds of feet into floating ponds are everywhere like hot air balloons. Mike, if there ever was a Garden of Eden, it must have looked like this. Milton, Gardens of Eden make up the majority of existence in this galaxy and billions of other galaxies. Milton appears out of nowhere and is in his alien costume, and a platform opens up from where Mike is standing and jets out 500 feet. Shops filled with pastries and other delicacies surround an open plaza. The period is Renaissance Europe. Milton, are you up for a stroll, Michael? Mike, I don't deserve this. I have done nothing in my life that merits me having this experience. The aroma of fresh baked bread, pastries and coffee fill the air. Mike follows Milton onto the platform, and they peruse the delicacies in the open market. No people, aliens or androids are stationed behind the stands or anywhere on the platform. Mike takes a plate and fills it with pastries and pours himself a steaming hot cup of coffee and sits at one of the tables. Milton takes nothing and sits opposite of Mike. Mike, Milton, is this all real, or is it created by you in my mind or something like that? Milton, it's all real, mind over matter kind of stuff, just like on Earth. Mike, can I create this? Milton, use the force, Luke, just kidding. Not while you are in human bondage. Mike, I assume because there is food and beverage in this place that there are also bathrooms. Milton, no bathrooms. The food and drink are simply for pleasure and have no residuals, they dissolve completely in your stomach. Mike, I saw what appeared to be thousands of similar craft as the one you brought me here with. Doctor, the face of this colossus's structure, are they all humans in similar situations as I? Question mark, which by the way I still have no clue what that might be. Milton, about 30% are humans from Earth, the rest are a mixture of hybrids from Earth and other planets, moons, or space cities, within this solar system. Mike, why don't I hear or see others on this platform? Milton, platforms are personal and private, but there is an area, a town inside this structure where humans and other entities can mingle. Would you like to go there now? Before Mike has a chance to answer, the platform drops several stories and joins with a larger platform fitting into it like a missing piece of a puzzle. Cut to, INT. Large platform. Continuous. Mike's platform with its shops and plaza incorporate into the larger structure and become as one. People are walking around the cobblestone streets, peering into shops, sitting at tables talking, eating and drinking. The setting reminds Mike of any number of cosmopolitan cities on Earth, except for the entities like Milton. Mike stopped speaking verbally sometime after he entered into the superstructure because he felt like he was talking to himself, and he noticed that few verbalized their conversations in the plaza area. Mike and Milton remained seated while Mike took in the scenery from his table. He was not quite sure what to do next. An alien similar looking to Milton approached the table and appeared to be conversing with Milton. Mike was not privy to their mental conversation and took the opportunity to get up from his chair and take a stroll through the streets. Cut to, INT. A watch shop. Continuous. Mike walks into a watch shop and browses the watches. For an instant he forgets he is far from Earth and feels normal. The store is similar to those on Earth with one exception: everything is free. Mike picks up a watch and the single attendant in the store approaches Mike and asks if he can be of assistance. The human-looking android vocalizes his speech while talking to Mike. Mike knows he is an android because the android has that written on his name tag. Android, these watches tell the time of any part of the galaxy, or if you wish to know the time for any specific place in the solar system or your particular time zone on Earth. Mike, I'll take one that is set for Central Time, USA, please. Android straps watch onto Mike's wrist. Android, the watch will dissolve once you exit the ship and return to your normal life on Earth. Mike, that sucks. I was hoping for a souvenir. Android, will that be all, sir? Mike, yes, thank you. Mike exits the shop with his new watch and notices that only 1 hour had passed since his walk in the park that morning. Cut to, INT. Large platform. Continuous. Mike walks further into the shopping district with a big smile on his face. Time is on his side, the sun is shining brightly, and he is on an alien outpost. It can't get better than that. Mike couldn't help but notice how astonishingly prominent the sun was. No matter his location on the platform, the view of the sun was spectacular. There are other humans in the streets and in the shops, but Mike is hesitant to stop and talk with them. Apparently they have that same reluctance because everyone walks by without saying a word to him. He walks towards a fountain that has seating around it and spots a woman sitting on one of the benches reading a book. He walks up to her and asks if she minded if he sat near her. She looked up at him and spoke a language he never heard before. It didn't sound as if it was from Earth. He gestured that he didn't understand and walked away. Mike went up a little ways and approached a man walking nearby and asked him what he thought of this place they were in. The man spoke the same language as did the women. Mike felt nauseous. He was the alien in a foreign place. Mike speaking telepathically, Milton, what's the deal? Are there no humans in this place? Milton, sure there are. The two people you spoke to are human. Mike, they spoke a very strange language, one I never heard before, and it definitely didn't sound like it was from Earth. Milton, oh, I forgot to tell you, communication with other humans is not allowed. We don't want anyone to corroborate their stories and experiences. Extraterrestrials don't exist in the minds of the vast majority of humans, and we prefer to keep it that way. Mike, why? Milton, the usual stuff: premature collapse of religious institutions, the loss of faith in government's ability to protect the people, a meltdown in financial markets, nations would destabilize and anarchy would ensue. Mike, don't you think that I'm taking this well? Why wouldn't others? Milton, you have been in the program for a long time and are conditioned to us, even though you don't remember but a fraction of those encounters because we blocked most of them out. Today we are going to unblock some of your past association with us and give you some new stuff. Mike, how many on Earth are in the same situation as I am? Milton, a few million out of a population of 6.5 billion. Mike, how long have you people? Do I call you people? How long have you people been on Earth? Milton, we are not people. We don't procreate as do humans and other similar entities that fill the galaxy. We have been on Earth forever, and will remain on Earth until the end of the solar system, many billions of years down the road. Mike, how old are you and do you have a home planet? Milton, we don't age at all. We are pure energy that inhabits various bodies, machines, for the purpose of interaction with physical forms as you, Michael. We do not have one home planet. We operate on many levels, dimensions if you prefer, and planets. Mike, are you a god? Milton, you asked that already, and no, I have a job. There are many levels of beings as myself. I'm at the mid-level, and working my way. Mike, does this structure, this building or whatever it is, serve a purpose other than to make someone as myself feel very small in comparison to its awesomeness? Milton, it also functions like a grand central station. From this place you can travel to any of the planets and moons where we have outpost. Are you ready to take another ride? Mike, hell yes. Can I take my camera? Milton, certainly. Just pick one up at the camera shop. The one you just passed. Cut to, INT. Camera shop. Continuous. Mike walks into the camera shop, looks around and sees hundreds of cameras and camcorders. Some look exactly like those on Earth. The attendant approaches Mike and asks if he needs help. Mike, which camera or camcorder would you recommend for me? And do they use memory sticks like those on Earth? Camera clerk, for Earthlings I would recommend these cameras over here, and they don't need memory sticks, take as many pictures as you want. Clerk walks to other end of counter. Mike, so the cameras we get depend on where we come from? Why is that? Camera clerk, some people, entities, can keep their pictures and movies and show them to their families, friends or associates back on their home planets, others cannot. Earth is on the blackout list. You can take photos but you can't bring them back to Earth with you, they must remain in your locker. Mike, in an excited voice, I have a locker? Camera clerk, Milton will show you your locker before you leave on your trip. Clark gives Mike a small camera and Mike leaves the shop. Cut to, INT. Hall of lockers, continuous. Dumbfounded, Mike finds himself in a cavernous room filled with doors. Mike, what happened, Milton? Did you transport me to another place as I walked out of the camera shop? Milton, no, there were two doors, one next to the one you entered off the street, and when you exited the store I steered you through that other door, which took you to the locker room. I saved you a few steps. Walk to the door that is glowing, it has your name on it and only you can enter it. Mike walks a few steps towards the glowing door. There are literally thousands of doors as far as the eye could see in both directions and on both sides of the cavern from where Mike is standing. Mike sees no one in the huge place. Mike, am I the only person here? Milton, no, there are others further down into the hall, too far for you to see, and there are some inside their lockers as we speak. Mike, inside their lockers? Can they get out? You are not going to lock me inside a locker, are you, Milton? Milton, what if I did? Do you think you have any control of what I do or can do with you? Mike, am I only a mouse to you, Milton? Milton, ever catch a mouse, Michael? Not easy, they are fast little critters and usually get away. You are not a mouse, and you can't get away. Mike, what happened to free will, and human rights? My rights, don't I have any? Milton, you left those cushy ideals back on planet Earth. Mike, why are you wasting your time with someone of such little importance as myself? I have no power, no rights, no value. Milton, you have value, immense value, otherwise you wouldn't be here. Most people on Earth have value, power and rights are illusions. Enter the locker, Michael. The door stops glowing and it opens. Mike walks in. Cut to, INT. Inside locker, continuous. The room is not very large. About 15 feet by 15 feet, the walls are bright white. A table is at the center of the room and on the table there are a dozen or so wood boxes. They look like boxes Mike made in wood shop back in grade school, nothing fancy. Mike walks up to the table and opens up one of the boxes. The box is filled with rocks and strange objects, and some pictures, pictures of a planet taken from one of its moons by Mike when he was a boy. Mike, I remember collecting these items when I was 10 years old. I didn't know the planet at the time but I recognize it now from the pictures as Uranus. From which moon did I take these pictures? Milton, the moon is called Miranda on Earth. We have bases on all the moons and you visited several of them. All those rocks and items are from different Uranus moons. Would you like to visit Uranus now? Mike, we're not talking anal probe, are we? Milton, before we make the space jump it's better not to have contents in your stomach or intestines, so yes. But that has nothing to do with the planet, you humans named it. The probe is painless and if you wish it can be blocked from your memory. Mike, please block it from my memory. Cut to, INT. Space station, continuous Mike instantly finds himself in another part of the space station. The magnificent sun remains prominent and makes Mike feel giddy at the sight of it. He sees large crowds of people lining up. Milton tells him to get in the line. Large ships are docked to the glass of the structure that is facing towards the sun, hundreds of them. From where Mike is standing, the ships look like small filaments attached to the outside of the glass. The line moves quickly as it serpentines across a huge platform that leads to one of the ships. The view during the walk is designed to elicit the full spectrum of human emotions, and Mike notices many people wiping tears from their eyes as they marvel at the incredible panorama. Mike wipes away tears of pure joy himself, not wanting to miss a second of the view from daring eyes. Some people have stepped out of the line and are down on their knees, as if praying. Everyone appeared to be traveling alone without family or friends. There are no young children in the line. No one looked under the age of 18. There seemed to be an equal number of women and men. Some appeared very old, perhaps in their 90s, but everyone was able to walk on their own. Mike Milton, you seem to be with me no matter where I am. Are you going on this trip, and if not, will we remain in communications as we are now? Milton, I'm not going on that trip. I will be in the vicinity of Saturn. Nevertheless, we will be in contact as we are now for the most part. Distance has no relevance on the mind wave. The ship turned from a sliver from when Mike first got in the line to a cylindrical monstrosity near the point of entry. It is a tanker 100+ stories tall and twice as long. Its color is charcoal black and nearly invisible in the backdrop of space. With the sun behind it, its ominous presence is equally intimidating as it is tantalizing. The entry is at the center of the cylinder. And standing directly in front of the cylinder, one could only see a large disc. The platform going to it was centered to the cylinder and transparent so that the full view of the face of the cylinder could be appreciated from top to bottom. Cut to INT. Cylinder ship, continuous Mike walks into what looks like a huge rotating honeycomb, with small one-man compartments running the length of the cylinder. The inside of the cylinder rotates. The rotation is like that of a Ferris wheel with hundreds of compartments on each level. Mike steps into a compartment and it closes. Cut to INT. Compartment, continuous Mike looks at his watch and notes that he is into his adventure about an hour and a half. He is able to stand up in the compartment, but a metallic platform rises out of the floor about 2 feet and stops, forcing him to sit. Mike sits and is told by Milton to lie down. Mike, can you see me, Milton? Milton, no, but I see what your eyes see. I pick up visuals from you along with your thoughts. I'm not omnipotent, although there are those above me who think they are. Dry humor. Mike's compartment rapidly fills with a gel and Mike loses consciousness as it engulfs him. Dissolve to EXT. View of the planet Uranus. Afternoon on Earth. The cylinder is in orbit around Uranus, docked to a large dark slab. Other cylinder-type ships of various sizes are docked at numerous places on all sides of the slab. They look like braille. Cut to INT. Compartment. Moments later, the gel in Mike's cell is absorbed back into the walls and Mike instantly regains consciousness. Mike sits up and the compartment door opens. Mike gets up and leaves the compartment. Mike has no memory of the trip, and to him it seemed instantaneous. Cut to INT. Cylinder ship, continuous Mike walks behind others as they emerge from their compartments and leave the cylinder. They enter into a large glassed-in gallery that is facing the planet Uranus. Cut to INT. Space station orbiting Uranus. Some people fainted at the sight of the planet. Mike is dumbfounded. He remembers the planet from his childhood, but it didn't have the same effect on him back then as it does now. Uranus rings are tilted perpendicular to the planet, giving the impression that the planet is going through a hoop. The color of the rings are like that of a rainbow. Mike is mesmerized. Then from nowhere, dozens of 3-foot-tall gray-skinned alien creatures fan out and go through the crowd of humans that had disembarked with Mike. Milton, don't be alarmed, Michael. Not everyone is there for the same reasons. Some of the humans around you are under a sentence of sorts and are being culled from the group you are with. The aliens emerge from the crowd, each leading a person with them. The people that are being led away don't look alarmed as if they understood what is going on. Michael feels the hand of an alien grab his arm and leads him away with the rest. Mike in near panic, "Milton, what is happening? They are taking me." "Milton, remain calm. I will have to investigate to find out what the mix-up is." Mike tries to pull his arm away and can't budge it. The small alien has a grip like a vice and incredible strength. The rest of the people seem unconcerned and go about exploring the space station. Mike and the others are taken to another platform and loaded into a ship. There is about 60 of them, all men. The oldest is Michael. The rest seem to be in their 30s and 40s. Mike is 52. Cut to INT. Ship destined to enter Uranus atmosphere. Mike, Milton, where are they taking me? No answer. For the first time, Michael feels alone and is terrified. All the pleasure he was experiencing moments earlier has turned to despair. The ship he is loaded into is round, about 40 feet in diameter, with large windows. The interior is open like a large hall. No controls or seating in that part of the ship. The aliens don't enter the ship. Mike is the last to go in and the opening closes behind him. Mike kicks at the door and falls to the floor. The craft walls are like rubber. Mike yelling at the top of his voice, "Does anyone speak English?" No one answers. However, a few looked his way when he yelled. Some of the men looked out the windows, others milled around the ship, and none of them spoke a word. Cut to EXT. Space station orbiting Uranus. Continuous. The ship detaches from the station and appears to freefall towards the planet Uranus. After a few minutes, it stabilizes and shoots straight into the planet at a speed that should have plastered the men on the opposite wall, yet no one was affected by G-forces. Mike looks at his watch. It's a few minutes after 12 noon on Earth. Apparently the aliens had conquered light speed since Uranus was about 2.5 light hours from Earth. The ship pierces the atmosphere. No flames from heat buildup splash across the windows. No heat buildup on the outer surface of the ship is apparent. Mike is not a physicist, but he knows that matter coming against matter at those speeds creates friction, which in turn creates tremendous amounts of heat. The ship acts like a supernatural cocoon that isolates matter from the effects of matter. The atmosphere is thick with bright colors that seem to be amplified by the dim light from the sun. Mike looks towards the sun and sees a faint light shrouded in a dense haze of gases. Below the clouds, the ship approaches a solid barrier. It looks metallic and seems to cover a huge patch above the planet. The speed of the alien ship makes it impossible to judge distance and size. Only a few minutes, less than 5 according to Mike's watch, passed from the time he boarded the ship to its destination somewhere above the planet. The ship flew through the metallic-looking barrier without stopping or slowing down. Mike was sure the ship was going to crash into it, yet no one else in the ship seemed concerned. Cut to INT. A city on Uranus. Continuous. The ship attaches itself to a sheer wall, one of the walls the city is contained inside of. The door of the ship opens up into a lobby and all the men file out unescorted. Mike is the last to leave the ship and the opening closes. Cut to INT. Building inside city. Continuous. The men disappear into the crowds of people and aliens that are scurrying around from place to place. Some of the people could pass for humans like those that were in the ship with Michael, but others are distinctly different, perhaps hybrids of some kind. The lobby is huge and there are many levels and platforms. Mike was dropped off at the uppermost level. Mike walks around like a lost child. For the first time since that morning, he feels hungry and thirsty. He only had a light breakfast, and usually snacked before lunch, but this day he didn't get the opportunity to snack on real food. He notices that there is a food court and people are sitting around tables and eating just like they do on Earth. But what are they eating, he wonders. He has no Uranus money, doesn't know if their food is edible for humans, and what about bathrooms? Mike walked towards one of the food outlets to see what the food looked like, but before he could reach his destination, something grabbed him by the arm. It was one of those short alien creatures. The creature swiftly led him away from the area and brought him to a room not far from where he disembarked moments earlier. The creature put him in the room and left him there. Cut to INT. A room, continuous. No one was in the room, the door had no handles and Mike was sinking deeper into a state of shock. There was a table in the room and some chairs. Mike sat on one of the chairs and laid his head on the table. The door opens and a human-type person enters and begins interrogating Mike.